You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
All righty, hour number three of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. John Fanta is going to join us 20 minutes from now. I'm going to go around the room here, and I just want you to answer this question with one or two answers. And answer one could be not a big deal or a big deal. When we get to the torpedo bats, Stu, Yankee Honk fan on Twitter, 36742, do you think the torpedo bats are a big deal or not a big deal?
Not a big deal.
Okay. Michael Santer, torpedo bats, big deal or not a big deal?
It's tough to answer. I think that it's a big deal in the sense that a lot of teams are going to copy it, and that it's beneficial to a lot of players out there, but not all players. I don't think it's a competitive advantage per se, but I do think that a lot of teams and a lot of players are going to start using them because it helps them. So a big deal in the sense that it's going to revolutionize the game in some ways, but not a big deal in the sense that the Yankees are cheating or anything like that.
Well, here's the thing. Well, here's why it can't be a competitive advantage. Everyone has the ability to do this. Major League Baseball has confirmed that the bats are legal. Other players have these bats as well, or they're now getting the bats made to get to their to their locker room and to their dugout. Yeah, I give the Yankees credit. They came up with something, and they crafted something to give them or to put some of their hitters in a more advantageous situation. Now, for people that have no clue what we're talking about, this is from MLB.com. The bats, which Major League Baseball confirmed are legal, are defined by an untraditional barrel which rests closer to the hitter's hands. Torpedo bats are designed with more wood and thus more mass concentrated in the area of the bat where the hitter is more likely to hit the ball. Each player touts a slightly different model, with the bat shape specifically customized to maximize potential damage on any given swing. That's from MLB.com. If you have no clue what we're talking about, remember when you were a kid and you play like wiffle ball or even t-ball? Like, I'm talking about like you're three or four. Like the Fisher-Price bats, the big yellow bats, and right, the barrel of the bat looked like Popeye could pretty much use it. That's what these bats are looking like. But I will say there's a lot of gross inaccuracies. People are like, oh, Aaron Judge uses a torpedo bat. Oh, he doesn't. The Yankees that use it, Anthony Volpe, Cody Bellinger, Jazz Chisholm, and some others, but Aaron Judge doesn't. So, yes, did the Yankees mash a ton of home runs this past weekend? Sure, they did. Did they do anything illegal? No. You know, you look back, you know what this reminds me of? Remember when John Harbaugh cried like a little baby when the Patriots played the Ravens in that epic playoff game? And they looked at the rule book, the Patriots, and they came up with this formation where you would have wide receivers that were ineligible and linemen that were eligible, and like everyone was pushed out to the left or the right side, and Harbaugh's like, oh, they cheated, oh, you know, they violated the rule books. No, they found a loophole in the rule books. And in this case, the Yankees, who a guy, he's not even in their organization anymore. I read this from John Boy, who's like the investigative MLB reporter pretty much. And he said, torpedo bat info. 9 of the 15 home runs that the Yankees hit this weekend were used by players using the bat. The analyst who helped design them worked with the Yankees from 2018 to 2024. He's now with the Marlins. Giancarlo Stanton actually used one last year. Bellinger said he first tried one with the Cubs last season, and Twins catchers Ryan Jeffers also used one yesterday. So this idea that this is a foreign concept, And right, like, I didn't hear about it before yesterday. Stu, I don't think you heard it before yesterday. Samter didn't hear about it before this weekend. But in the baseball community, the elites of the baseball community, like the actual players and the teams, some players haven't heard about this because it hasn't infiltrated their dugout yet. But obviously, there has been enough going around here where Cody Bellinger's like, oh, this isn't the first time I used it. Or now you have the guy that created it who now works for the Miami Marlins. So I don't think this is something that's going to go away. And this idea, and trust me, I'd be the first one to slam the Yankees if they were cheating. First one. Would love it. Love to see the Yankees caught up in a scandal because then their fans would be squirming and they'd be trying to defend something. But this isn't cheating. This is knowing the rule book, knowing what you could get away with. And also, let's say the Yankees were cheating. Would they have contacted Major League Baseball to get an answer if this is legal or not? Like they said, hey, this is what we created. Can we use this? Major League Baseball said it's legal. So what's the issue here? What's the big controversy? It would be like, okay, if I knew I could get away with something, I read a rule book. Oh, I'm calling you to see if this is legal. And you tell me yes, then why wouldn't I use it? I don't got to tell everyone. Other people are going to find out, but I don't got to tell everyone. You know, it's almost like the NFL's a drug testing system. The NFL, if you put anything in your body in the NFL, before you put it in your body, you have the ability to check with the NFL if it's a legal substance or not. That's basically what the Yankees did here. They came up with something. They were about to quote unquote take something or implement something. And before doing so, they said, hey, Major League Baseball, is this legal? Major League Baseball said yes. So if Major League Baseball is telling me it's legal, it's not like the Yankees just showed up to the plate and said, here's this Popeye-looking bat. You know, here's the torpedo bat. It's not as if they just did that. They checked with Major League Baseball to make sure that it's legal. So if the folks running Major League Baseball are saying it's legal, even if it looks foreign to Stu, to Samter, and myself, doesn't mean it's illegal. The Yankees actually did something smart here. And can we have an honest conversation here? If we see more home runs, is that a bad thing for Major League Baseball? I don't think so. It's the same thing with the steroid era. Everyone now poo-poos the steroid era. Oh, it was horrible what happened. Oh, Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire and Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds. All these guys, bunch of animals. Oh, how could you cheat? How could you cheat? Do you remember where Major League Baseball was before the steroid era? Do you know for someone that's 30 years old like myself, how fun it was to grow up in the steroid era where you had Sammy Sosa up against Mark McGwire, when you had Barry Bonds just hitting moonshot home runs each and every night? So if you're giving me something here that is now deemed legal, that you could say could enhance my chances of hitting home runs and hitting big, thunderous, prodigious home runs, that's a bad thing? This is almost like, and I know this is a weird way to say it, this is almost as if it's a legal version of steroids. And I know people are going to say, whoa, it's like the Yankees are, I don't think the Yankees are doing anything illegal. I just said that. I understand. But you are giving a bat that is designed for the barrel of the bat to be bigger. And you're so when you hit that spot and you're giving a bigger chance to hit that spot, the ball is going to go further. Like I was listening to one of the Yankee games on the radio this weekend. And Dave Sims, I believe it was on the Volpe. Was it the Volpe home run, Stu? That it didn't look like it should have. I think it was Volpe. I may be wrong.
Yeah, it looked like it was just like a fly ball. Yeah.
And I know Yankee Stadium's a bandbox to begin with, right? There's sometimes you hit home runs at Yankee Stadium where it's like, oh, that looks like it's a pop-up. But I'm pretty sure Dave Sims said in the broadcast, like, oh, that's a pop-up to left or wherever it was, and then it was a home run. Now, you don't want that to happen necessarily. But do I think this is going to be something where you're just going to all of a sudden start having, and Yankee Stadium is a smaller ballpark, but now all of a sudden you're going to start having like pop-ups turn into home runs because of this bat? No. But I don't think this is the worst thing for Major League Baseball. But I do think there's a bigger point here. in a national landscape, right? We're a national show. When do we usually talk about baseball? When there's controversy? When Shohei Ohtani's interpreter is a degenerate gambler, or maybe was placing bets for Ohtani and there was a cover up there? I don't want to make any accusations, just throwing it out there. Steroid era, when there's a brawl, when Rob Manfred opens his mouth and says something stupid, tell me another day that ends in Y. We're not really focusing much on the games. Now, this is controversy, but if it improves the product and improves more home runs, and I'm not saying this could have the same impact as the steroid era, but if it gives you a chance to have more home runs and we see more great chases because there are players that are not really power hitters that are now getting a bat that's going to be conducive to hitting more home runs, is that really a bad thing? I don't think so. I don't think it is whatsoever. Now, it's like you look at, remember the spider tack thing? And right, pitchers felt like it was unsafe not to have the sticky substance because they couldn't really control how they were throwing the baseball. It's almost this is the reverse of it. It's like we want more home runs. We're going to make a bigger bat. We're also going to make the pitchers, it's going to still, because we're checking their hands for all the substances still. I think it's the dumbest thing. When you have a reliever trot out of the bullpen and they check his hands, or a guy has a 1-2-3 inning and then you have an umpire checking his hands. So we're taking more away from the pitchers, right? We're taking away your performance-enhancing substance, and then we're going to give the batters an ability to have bigger bats here. Let's call it what it is. This is Major League Baseball who got into this realm of the game needs to put the ball more in play, right? We're going to move the shift. We're going to outlaw the shift. We need the ball to be more in play. It's too much home run or strikeout. And has the results really changed that much? You know, what are we talking about when we talk about the games? Aaron Judge and how many home runs he hits. Shohei Ohtani, how many home runs he hits. So if you're providing something that could provide more power to the game and Major League Baseball deems it legal, what's the big controversy here? I don't think so. This is, to me, the Yankees coming up with something, Major League Baseball saying it's within the rules, and now I think Major League Baseball believes that this could be an advantageous situation. Because the more home runs, I think the better for Major League Baseball. At least that's the way that I was raised with the game. Now, everyone's raised in a different era. Everyone could like different things in the history of Major League Baseball. But for me as a kid, the golden era of my life in Major League Baseball, Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Rafael Palmeiro. Like, you think of some of those guys that just mashed home runs. And did steroids help them? You bet your ass they did. But everybody turned ahead and looked the other way when that was going on because they knew it was good for the game. Now, I'm not saying these torpedo bats, it's too early, too small of a sample size. The Yankees can hit home runs without them, right? But if we start getting more and more home runs and more teams start using these torpedo bats, I think it makes a better product in Major League Baseball. And some people will use them, some people won't. Right? Like Aaron Judge says, I want no part of this. So who even knows if it necessarily works, but I think it improves your chances of having the ball hit a better area of the bat with how large the bat now is, which could produce, obviously, the ball traveling further and there being more home runs.
I think it will also maybe lead to more strikeouts because
yeah,
you have a thicker part kind of right there in the middle and therefore not as much.
And also the approach, too.
Yeah.
You're thinking just home run, home run, home run, home run. If you're over-aggressive, sometimes you miss and you
which
just
is basically
out.
What the Yankees have been doing for the past decade. It's just home run, home run, home run, so it doesn't hurt. But here's the other interesting part of it, that we don't really know if there's a link necessarily yet, but we know that Giancarlo Stanton has injuries, ligament damage in both of his elbows.
Okay.
All right? Last month, during spring training, he said that his injuries were likely tied to, quote, bat adjustments.
Hmm.
And it turned out that he was one of the guys using the torpedo bat last year.
Yeah.
So there's speculation that his injuries may have been caused from, like, when you're swinging a bat that is, the weight is distributed differently. It's going to change how your body reacts to it. And so there is certainly a chance that him using this bat last year
could impact it. So it's an adjustment. It's an adjustment. Here's why, and I think Stu may agree with this, because Stu kind of gave me a look when you said this. If this was a guy that was never injured, all right.
Bingo.
Then maybe I'd be like, there's some validity to it. I'm not saying you're wrong. But Giancarlo Stanton wakes up and the guy's injured. He, like, find me a time when the guy's not injured. So I don't know. Just like how it's not fair after this one weekend to say, oh, this is going to change Major League Baseball 100%. I know everyone's going to start using this. They're going to experiment. They're going to see if they like it or not. They're going to see if it actually works. That's too small of a sample size. To then just say, oh, just because Giancarlo Stanton is injured, it's too small of a sample size, you know?
Just something to keep an eye on.
No, it's something to monitor. But that's what we're in the monitoring stages. This is, to me, though, has the potential. I'm not saying it's going to be the case. To be the legal form of steroids now in the year of 2025 in bat form. That's what I really think that this could potentially be. Because if we go back to, like, now guys are mashing 60, 70 home runs, when Aaron Judge basically does it without the torpedo bat, and Shohei Ohtani basically does it without the torpedo bat, I think that they're, like, there was a lot of players in Major League Baseball. Like, put it this way. If Barry Bonds didn't have the steroids, do I still think he would have been one of the greatest baseball players of all time? Yes. But then there's some other players that just out of nowhere started hitting 40, 35 bombs a year, and you're like, whoa, well, that's got to be steroids. That's what I'm curious to see with this. The non-power hitters, how much do their power numbers increase when they use the torpedo bat? That's the thing to monitor for me. All right, it is Zach Gelb on the Infinity Sports Network. John Fanta will join us next. We'll talk some college basketball with him.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, we were talking about this before the show when I said that we were going to have John Fanta on. And we were talking about some of the voices in college basketball that I grew up with. Bill Raftery, right? Ooh, onions! And then the great Dick Vitale. And when I was talking about John Fanta, Samter and I both agreed that John has the potential to be like our generation's next voice of March Madness, that in like 50 years, we're still talking about him and his excitement for college basketball. Because I think pound for pound, he is the best at talking and covering college basketball that we do have today. So enough with the slobber fest, and let's bring on John Fanta, as I love talking college basketball with him. John, how are you?
I love talking college basketball with you too, Zach. I'm great. I love this week. It's a celebration of the sport. And you can look at it two ways here, depending on what side of the scale that you're on. You can look at it from the standpoint of, well, four number one seeds. I love the chaos, and I love all that. Here's what I would say to that. Texas Tech could easily be here right now. Why not Ole Miss? Ole Miss was in position against Michigan State. I mean, we could go on and on about different things that happened in this tournament that could have led to one thing happening or the other. Not necessarily really with Duke and Auburn, but with Houston, they could have easily lost to Purdue. My standpoint is this is going to be rare. You might see two ones and two threes, or two twos and two and a four and a six. Four number ones has only happened one other time for a reason. And don't tell me it's all about who's getting paid what, because there's some teams on the 2-3-4 line that paid their players more and are not in the Final Four. These four teams were the best all season. It is a historic Final Four, but what it ends up being in our minds is determined by, do we get a Chris Jenkins Villanova moment? Do we get a Gordon Hayward at the buzzer type of moment? Do we get Texas Tech Virginia in 2019 that was Virginia's ultimate redemption? I'm intrigued, and all eyes are going to be on, and I think we're going to see some high, high ratings this weekend.
Would you agree with this statement? Cooper Flagg is the best player remaining in the NCAA tournament, but the most entertaining is Walter Clayton Jr.?
I would actually agree with that, because if Clayton hit a shot Saturday night that I can't even use more than one hand to name the players that I've seen make that shot.
He reminded me of Steph Curry, if we're being honest.
Had a little bit of Ali Farouk Manesh of, you can't be serious with that shot. You know, when he let that go, and that's a legendary line from Dan Bonner, who I think Dan Bonner, Stan Van Gundy, and Kevin Harlan. I'm just entertained. You would think they call college games the whole year before they hop on the mic for the tournament. Those are three goats. And with Clayton, I'm sitting there watching the game, Zach. I'm like, go to the rim. Like, just go to the rim. You don't need it. It was amazing. It was the perfect storm. Florida played the analytics and fouled Texas Tech twice early when the majority of coaches don't do it. And then you want to give your All-American a shot. And he is. He's incredibly entertaining. Cooper Flagg is the best prospect in college basketball that I've seen since I started covering the sport. That was 2017. So professionally, like where I have never seen anybody truly with a presence like him. And you talk to coaches, they say the same thing. Wow, we're blown away. I thought Kelvin Sampson on a show earlier today, Zach, he's like, I have a plan. He goes, I have five plans. He goes, there's a chance none of them work. Why? He's the number one pick in the NBA draft in June, but he makes everybody around him better. And if he gets this national championship, Zach, he's right there with Melo. He's right there, you know, with the likes of an AD. And he's better than Zion. He's better than Zion.
I also think this, John Fanta, too. When we talk about Florida and Duke, right, we talk Walter Clayton Jr. first. We talk Cooper Flagg, obviously, as well. The coaches here, I don't believe, get enough credit. I know it's at Duke, and, right, anyone could coach it at Duke. Ask Kyle Neptune about being at Villanova. Hubert Davis right now at being at UNC, replacing a legend. What Shire has done at Duke is really damn special this year. And also Todd Golden, breakout star, obviously, in the business.
I'm going to use an example that's outside the box. That's why I like talking about this sport with you. It's got a little bit of – so this sport, coaching in this sport, look at Scott Drew's career arc. Do you think anybody can walk into Baylor and win a national championship?
Absolutely not.
How's the same guy doing now? Right now he's having a bit of a crisis of, like, how long do I want to keep going? I have to adjust back to what I need. I got a portal better. Look at Bill Self. Bill Self is one of the greatest coaches to walk on the planet in the college game. How's his last 2 years gone? And people are criticizing him for roster construction. If you're going to criticize someone for their roster construction when they're down, are we not going to praise someone for their roster construction when they're this good? Shire's 37, Zach. This could have been a flameout. Had he lost in the first weekend of the tournament.
Disaster.
Disaster. He would go into next year with Hubert Davis-like pressure. Enough with this. Anybody could coach. He's got the Boozers coming in. He's got Flag. I get a chance. People say to me, like, what do you do in the offseason? Zach, there is no basketball offseason. The NBA playoffs start next. I'm going to watch all the playoffs. I'm sure we'll catch up at some point because I'm watching all the games like you are. We're junkies. And then the recruiting circuit hits. June. The NBA draft is June. July is the circuit. Every time, without question. Boozers, Cooper Flagg, Kamba Malawach, you name it. John Shire is sitting in the front row. And that says it all. Because there's other guys in this who show up once. And keep in touch on this. That guy is wired differently. I did a piece on him a couple years ago. Zach, this is the type of kid who would practice. He would wake up. Glenbrook North High School is where he went. Illinois legend, right? Actually got named the Jewish Jordan for a while by the local community centers there because of how damn good he was. And shout out, we have three Jewish head coaches in this Final Four, which I think is, you know, it's an amazing storyline. And I think we'll hear from those three coaches about what that all means to them. And when John Shire was growing up, he was the best player on the floor. He would wake up at 6:30. He'd go and get shots up. He'd go to school at like 8:10. He'd do a full school day. He'd get done at 3. This is from his coaches. He'd practice 3 to 5:30. He'd shoot 5:30 to 7. He went home, quick dinner, homework, 7:15 to like 9. And his parents said 4 days out of the week, back in the gym at 9:05 because he missed a couple of shots. This guy's different, and he's only 37. And so it's very real that you and I are talking a week from now saying, how many can he win? And I don't know about you, Like, I think that's really interesting for the sport.
Yeah.
It's really compelling to talk about.
Well, you need a young face because there's a – and Dan Hurley, right, is not ancient. Let's be clear. But, you know, you have a lot of successful coaches that are older and guys that – have already walked away, like a Jay Wright, obviously, Roy Williams and Coach K left. I don't think it's a bad thing having Duke win it all, and now people could then, just because it's Duke, start hating John Shire, who's like the nicest dude that you'll ever meet. John Fanta here with us. So, like we mentioned with Duke and with Florida, you think of Walter Clayton and also Cooper Flagg first, then the coaches. For Auburn and Houston, I think of the coaches first, and then an L.J. Cryer and Jani Broom. But for Kelvin Sampson and Bruce Pearl, where their careers were at with controversy, to see what they've done at Auburn and Houston and the sustained success, man, it's tough to not want to see one of those guys end up having their one shining moment on Monday night.
I couldn't agree with you more, because how many better shots are you going to get? And that's what's also fascinating about this Final Four, is that we do walk into this week in San Antonio. And you and I have been talking for a few years now, and you know, like, I'm with you. There hasn't been enough Cinderellas. Better, like, let's get some next year. I think that the carriage is getting the gas tank up. It's going to make it sweeter when she returns.
Yeah, but it's such a gross overreaction. We've been so spoiled since 2018. We've seen 16s beat ones twice. We've seen 15s upset twos. It's like 1 year it doesn't happen, and up, the sport's dead. Hey, how many years have they been telling one and done's we're going to kill the sport? Every single year they come up with something.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And you know what? I also have a message to some of the people that I respect the most in this. The tweets every 10 minutes on someone entering the portal.
Yeah.
Enough. Nobody cares.
I don't care.
I don't give a damn who's entering the transfer portal. I wish the kid the best. They're allowed to go wherever they want. But what is the big deal about this? Congratulations. You're transferring. Best of luck in the next step. But like, great. It's a portal that you refresh and the name pops up on the screen. It's amazing. What an amazing concept. But I get it. Don't get me wrong. I get it. I just think, yeah, we're in this world of like definitive in the moment. Well, what happens if we see two buzzer beaters this weekend and the national championship gets decided at the Horn?
Greatest tournament ever. That's what people then start saying.
Greatest weekend ever. Like, you just got to have can we have any sort of balance. Apparently not. I can with you. But that's what's interesting as well about this Final Four. Where I was going was, we always tell each other like it is. And there's been times, last year I said to you, we're going to Arizona for a UConn coronation. No way they lose.
No.
This year, for the first time in a few years, genuinely, I'm walking into, like, because the 2022 one, Villanova lost Justin Moore. I didn't feel they could win it. I genuinely feel as though I can put the image in my head of each of the four programs hoisting the trophy. That's fun.
How would you rank them then, 1 through 4, in terms of most likely winning it all and then least likely winning it all?
Duke 1, Auburn 2, Florida 3 and Houston 4. And I say that because Houston's got to go against Duke on prep. And I say that because I still get a little bit wary of Houston meeting the nation's number one offense in efficiency and Houston going into a tailspin like they did against Purdue.
And also, Duke defense, not enough credit. What they did to Alabama... Oh. I was at a wedding Saturday night. I was so annoyed, even though my friends got married. I'm like, oh, Duke and Alabama, I'm going to be the guy that's on the phone at the wedding. Why? I hate being that person. And I'm like, this game stunk. And it's a credit to Duke's defense, really, that does not get talked about enough.
I haven't seen a team shut a team down defensively like that, especially one that averages 91.4 points per game. They have seniors. Like, Mark Sears and Grant Nelson have seen it. Cliff Amore's been around the block. Chris Youngblood's been in a lot of big games. They looked overwhelmed. You frustrate Mark Sears. I haven't seen Mark Sears have that. I mean, LSU this year, when he kind of got into it a little bit with the staff, But like since Steph Castle in UConn, but the length always was bothersome. BYU didn't present any of that. I mean, I'm sure. I will say this, like super look ahead. I know they're not the biggest of brands, but like I'm actually really intrigued to see BYU next year because they're going to have AJ DeBanza, the number one player in the class, and Kevin Young is going to think about that loss the whole season because he didn't do anything defensively to alter Alabama. Duke's up in you. They are guarding you off the bus. They're limiting everything that you're really good at. They make it hard. Did Alabama get anything? I mean, maybe for 3 to 5 minutes of the game, they really were in a flow. There was no flow for the majority of the game. To take that team out of their stuff is why Duke will win the national championship a week from tonight.
Two things Big East related, John Fanta. What did you make of the Kevin Willard hire?
Well, for Villanova to get a Big Ten coach who's coming off a Sweet 16, they're doing their due diligence and they're playing the waiting game that you have to play. Honestly, Zach, if Maryland plays anybody else in the second round of the NCAA tournament, they're out. And so then this drama machine doesn't forge on the train tracks. It was kind of clear early in that game that Maryland was kind of distracted. I give credit to the kids. But, like, here's the deal. You're at a Big Ten school. And I actually think that Maryland can be good in all this and can get the right guy and forge on. I would call Chris Beard. I'd make him say no. I think Kevin's a Big East guy. This is a guy who wants to coach basketball, golf. Villanova does a lot of that. And drink wine.
They got plenty
of red wine. Main line. Should he have done all that in press conferences? No. I mean, that was a lie. He said he had no regrets, but it was a lie. But when the opposite happens and a coach says, "What rumors? What are you talking about? I haven't heard a thing." It was that there was a little bit of like back and forth of like, well, what, you went on a radio interview, you said Maryland's been great.
He should have been more like Will Wade, if we're being honest.
Everybody should be like Will Wade in that regard. Now everybody should be like Will Wade because everything's legal. But like, yeah, I also, like, Maryland fans are all upset and they're whining and stuff. If you've been to 3 of the last 4 Sweet 16s or like 4 of the last 5 Elite Eights or whatnot, and you've been at that level, I can understand why you're upset. But when the coach asks in December for an extra night with his team in a hotel in New York City and your administration shut it down, did you think that coaches are crazy?
Yep.
All of them. Zach, I'm going to tell every coach I see in San Antonio.
You're nuts.
You're going to say that to me. You're crazy too. Like, coaches, the one thing or two things can make all the difference. Zach, it's Maryland. You got, at some point, you have to decide what your priorities are going to be. And I love a lot of the people that work there, you know, in their external group, in their athletic department. But you got an interim AD right now. You don't, I've been told by multiple people, there wasn't any dialogue between the leadership there and the coaches. That's in the Big East, when you're a men's basketball coach and when you're at Villanova, you get an open door to the president, to the AD. And if your family even has an inkling of doubt about the situation and you got two teenage boys and they're offering you $6 million and your biggest rival in the Big East was Jay Wright, who you beat in the 2016 Big East tournament title game, then Villanova went on to win the national championship. That's why he's sitting as the Villanova head coach. That's why he got on a plane and went to Hinkle Fieldhouse to watch the women's team today, and why he's getting on another plane tomorrow to go to Vegas. Why? Because he knows what their priority is. Their priority is to win basketball, not conference. When you've won in 16 and 18, when you've tasted that standard, your donor base expects what? National championships. That's why he's the coach at Villanova.
Now, I'm just asking. I have no clue if this is true or not, but with Pitino and R.J. Lewis, it was such a fun story this year, John Fanta. With Pitino benching in the last few minutes, was there something more than him just not having it that night? It just makes me wonder.
I think there is. I'd be surprised if there wasn't. We'll never know, or at least I don't think we'll ever know. But, Zach, there had to be. Yeah, I mean, they're just...
It's bizarre still.
Yeah, my read on the situation is his circle... Not necessarily, you know, the kids have these circles.
And also, he's not an NBA player right now, so it's like...
Not at all. Well, that's part of the reason why you see the coach saying, go to the NBA. because I don't think the coach wants the Big East player of the year and an All-American transferring from a place that has unlimited money with Mike Rapoli. That means there was a falling out of some sort. Now, I don't know what that entailed, but Zach, I'm sure this comes down to an agency saying you're a pro. And guess what, buddy? If you're not a pro, we're going to get you $3.2 million, which is what some of these guys are asking for. And I think at a certain point, it's like, you know, to me, what's fascinating about this whole thing is when he won, you know, when he was in that game, when he came out of that game to the bench, none of that felt like it was just because of the game that he had had. It now, looking back at it, felt like the end of a tenure between two parties, and that was it.
Which is wild because St. John's was back, and a big reason was because of R.J. Lewis and obviously Rick Pitino. It's weird that there was something there.
Yeah, but you know what? Look at the history of sports. Look at Brady Belichick.
Yeah.
Look at, you know, Nick Saban rubbed people the wrong way all the time.
Shaq and Kobe.
Shaq and Kobe. So now in college hoops, things don't have to be worked out. If you have two different wavelengths, the coach can say, that's fine. Go ahead. I will prove to you that we're not the problem. And the player will say, I will prove to you that the coaching staff was wrong. It's a he said, she said in today's day and age.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I literally have 30 seconds. Browns at 2. Who do you want them to pick?
Abdul Carter. I think he's the best available talent there. I think Ward is going 1. If they keep the pick at 2, that's who I think they should select. My favorite thing about the Browns today is their owner, Jimmy Haslam. Did you see this?
Yeah, with Watson.
Comes out and apologizes to the fans. Zach, that's like filing for a divorce, and 10 years later, drunkenly at the family party, you finally have the stomach to say, sorry, kids, I screwed up. The damage is done, Jim. It's done. And he's like, well, I hope we can find a quarterback. What have you done to show us that you are going to find one?
It's been a long time.
What have you done? So I don't know. You know what, Zach? If they get Shedeur Sanders, here's my thing. At the end of the day, that kid's going to come in the league with a chip on his shoulder, and I know Stefanski's good with system quarterbacks. And you know what? I'll grab my popcorn because at the very least it'll be theater. Because Zach Elb, do I really want to trot Kirk Cousins out there? Like what? What? Where am I going at that point? What, 9-8? Congratulations. Here's a cookie. I want to try. Until you get the right franchise quarterback, until you find Jaden Daniels, and I'm not saying either one of these two guys is, nothing else matters.
That's why I would go with Shedeur, because at least it gives you hope, and I think Abdul Carter is the best player in the draft. Anyway, John Fanta, always great to catch up. We appreciate it. Thanks so much.
You know, if the Giants get him, it'll be a home run, and if the Browns get him, it'll be...
Thanks, I don't know. Zach. I don't know. The Giants are like kind of the Browns, honestly, now with how bad
and
it
so
is.
And so are the Jets. Get in line, buddy. Yeah. Thanks, Zach.
There he is, John Fanta. Always love talking with him. We'll take our final break of the day, update time. Here's Zach. All righty, this is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. It's time to answer our Ask the Pros question of the day. And it's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Riley in Nashville for the O'Reilly Auto Parts Ask the Pros question of the day. You can submit a question by tweeting at INSportsNet or at Zach Gelb's hashtag Ask the Pros. And Riley in Nashville says, hey, Zach, who do you think the Tennessee Titans should take with the number one overall pick? You can thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts. You have Riley in Nashville asking the O'Reilly Auto Parts question of the day. That's a tongue twister that I, of course, just had to laugh about. Who is going to be, or who I think should be, the number one overall pick of the Tennessee Titans in the draft? Well, let's hear from Brian Callahan, the head football coach of the Tennessee Titans, when he was asked, would they actually think about trading the number one pick for the draft that will get underway on April 24th in Green Bay?
I think you do your due diligence and you weigh whatever it is that's being presented. If it's something that is you feel like is beyond the value that you would ever have thought you could get, that's one thing. But then you also have to look at what is a potential franchise quarterback look like. And if you think they're that good and they're that type of player, those guys to me are priceless. There is no price that you can put on those type of players if you think they're that caliber of quarterbacks.
And also, let's hear from Brian Callahan one more. Plans for the number one pick.
I would be wrong to say there's a leader in the clubhouse at this point. We're still going through all of the process. And we got meetings coming up still that we have to finish when it comes to the Colorado players, both Travis and Shador, their pro day and then their private workout. So we're just looking for those guys to perform, and that's all we're looking for.
Here's what I think they should do. Draft Cam Ward. It's the same thing with John Fanta, right, that we just discussed, where you look at the Browns. They have no hope right now without a quarterback. So, sure, you could say, like I can, that Abdul Carter is the better player. Sure, you could say that Travis Hunter is the better player. But the value of the position is so much greater at the quarterback position. So, for me, I think you need the quarterback. Tennessee doesn't have one. Mr. Mayo Boy isn't cutting it in Will Levis. And, you know, I like Will Levis, but he's just not a good pro quarterback. I don't think anyone should be surprised after watching him play at Kentucky. So I would then take Cam Ward. Brian Callahan is now in his second year on the job. Wanted to basically strangle himself last year watching Will Levis play. I didn't think he was going to survive the season. So now you have to go on out there and you have to get the quarterback. That's what I would do. That's what I would do. I would take Cam Ward with the number one overall pick. All righty. That will do it for a Monday edition of the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. I guess Craig Carden was in our YouTube chat. Now, some people may be like, oh, that was a fake Craig Carden when Fanta was on. It would make sense. You know, I don't want to say I set them up together. You know, I kind of put Craig on the John Fanta train a year ago. Now he uses him all the time on his Fox show. So it wouldn't surprise me when Fanta put something out and then Craigie jumps in here for a few minutes to watch on the YouTube. But, it could be a fake account. You never know. All righty. But that will do it. Big thanks to John Fanta for joining us. Big thank you to Bruce Pearl for stopping on by as well. We'll be back tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific time. On all of our great Infinity Sports Network affiliates, SiriusXM, Channel 375, the free Odyssey app, and streaming on YouTube. Samter, Stu, Ack, thank you very much. Big thanks to each and every one of you. Be back with Mignon, everybody. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.